Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. I'm, of course, your host, Flex Shane. I'm joined by my guy, Brandon Adam. And today, we have a rising star in the industry over at rotowire.com. You guys know him as an OG of the DFS Army, Alan Sosnowski. What's going on, brother? How you doing?
How dare you call me a rising star? I'm a super... No, just kidding. You know, it's always good to be back with you guys. This is like, it always feels like home when I'm hanging out with you, with Brandon, with Shane, and obviously when Matt's here too, and the geek. Like, it to me, it feels like a bunch of guys just hanging on the couch that we've known each other since we were all playing in leagues together. So it feels very comfortable and, and like I said, like home.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're so happy to have you on the show, Al. For those of you who just can't get enough Alan Sosnowski, check out the DFS Army feed. Check out our podcast feed. Al, you and the geek did some rankings for, I believe it was the wide receiver position, the running back position, and the quarterback position. So you guys can find that over at the main DFS Army page. But Al, today we're here to talk about your Invitational, an NFFC high stakes fantasy football contest, a $350 entry, and a whopping $250,000 US cold hard cash to the first place winner of the tournament. Man, there were some absolute sharks in this draft. You know, just to name a few, there's Theo Greminger of playerprofiler.com. I believe there's Dalton Del Don who was there. Mark Stopa was streaming with you guys.
Even on one of the teams, this guy, Nicky Simone, who's won, he took fifth place in the overall a couple years ago.
Holy moly.
Yeah, he was a team two, I think. And again, you know, non-conventional draft, which we'll see. But like I said, you know, money talks. The guy's won money in the in NFFC before. So,
yeah, and I think what's going to be really interesting. Like, so for the people, the show today is we're going to share the draft board. If you go down to the notes and description of the show, you can actually follow along the draft board yourself. Go over to rotowire.com. The link is there, /try, and you get 2 free days over at Rotowire.
There you go.
No credit card required. Go get it. Al, before we dive into this, just tell the people a little bit about what your schedule is, because in addition to RotoWire, you're, of course, a host on the RotoWire SiriusXM show. So have you guys released the schedule for the season yet? What are you guys going to be doing this year?
Yeah, and just to underline what you said, I mean, the purpose of today's podcast, before we get into that, is really to help people and see what the, quote, experienced drafters are doing, because sometimes there's mega mistakes in those draft boards, which we're going to point out. And then there's things we're like, oh, okay, this is how you're supposed to do it. So we're not just going over our drafts, but like, hey, look what we did. Yeah. We want you, when you do your home league and, you know, in your office league against your friends, to be able to take advantage of some of the things that we're going to talk about. But as far as if you want to, our SiriusXM show during the rest of the month of August, 1 to 3 on Sundays, and then in season, 7 a.m., we're going to wake up with you, 7 a.m. on game days, Channel 87, SiriusXM. If you wake up a little bit later, you could always rewind and the app, and we'll get you ready with all the overnight injury stuff. So that's what we're going to be doing.
That's 7 a.m. Eastern for those of you. Brandon and I are a couple hours behind, so we'll be definitely listening on demand and absolute appointment viewing. Boys, before we get into the draft board, though, we got to talk about just a little bit of news. There's two major news stories this week. Of course, the Jerry Jeudy injury. So we'll talk about him and where he went in this draft. And then I feel like, because most of us play in Superflex leagues at this point, we got to discuss Trey Lance, Al. And this is a take that I really want to understand, because I had over at the DFS Army Discord a bunch of questions saying, Trey Lance in Dynasty, is he droppable? What do you say?
I wouldn't drop him, right? I mean, it's if you could, someone will give you a fifth round rookie pick for him, so you definitely don't drop him. Like, I think you can do better, but at this point, just hold him, right? There's a This doesn't really change anything for fantasy football. Like, you know, like Dak is still the unquestioned starter. Trey Lance is like, you're holding him for, if maybe Dak misses 2-3 games and he's the guy that gets the shot. I mean, it seems like Cooper Rush is the immediate backup. But, you know, one interesting, if you want like some sort of off the wall take, is that Dak's getting a little bit older and they have an out on his contract next year. So, so if they develop him, okay, so that's like the hold him. You've had so many chances to get out of Trey Lance and you haven't done it so far. So if you now you're just stuck holding Bitcoin at zero right now, right? That's basically what it sounds like.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Brandon, do you have a take? You agree.
It's just, yeah, I'm shocked that a team that could use a quarterback didn't go after him. I'm shocked that Minnesota about to have to pay Kirk Cousins again a shit ton of money, they didn't think about picking him up in that offense as well. I'm shocked Atlanta didn't do it. It's just what it is. I there must be something going on, you know, like because as a talent, everybody knew he was raw. Everybody knew the project. You should have gone in with clear eyes when you draft that kid. And I just feel like he kind of got a raw deal where he went on a really good team that didn't commit to him. Unlike the Bears, where they had a raw prospect like Fields and they had to commit to him and they let him play through mistakes and play. And yeah, I feel like it was two different ways of handling a high talent. And I don't like how the Niners kind of handled the project. Like
hey guys, that. Here's the other teams that were reportedly made actual hard offers on Trey Lance. The Bills, the Ravens, and the Lions, but their offer wasn't as good as the Cowboys. So that's why. So you could see why Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, that fits that the style sense. Of backups, right? And then the Lions, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. they drafted Hendon Hooker. He's not going to be ready. So Trey Lance for, you know, mm-hmm. presumably they offered like a fifth or a sixth round pick.
Yeah.
So all those teams make sense.
Lions would have been awesome. that would have been such a good one. Unfortunately, it's just what it is.
Yeah. I mean, the timing is so precarious too for Trey, right? Where, had this happened at the start of the season or at the start of the offseason where teams are installing their offenses,
yeah,
then like a team like Atlanta, like Washington with Sam Howell, might have been more inclined to go out and send an offer and then just let them compete through camp. But the fact that it happened at the end of camp, it was a tough situation. They have their plans already. But
hey, Shane, who's worth more in Dynasty right now in Superflex? Zach Wilson or Trey Lance?
Zach Wilson.
I would say Trey Lance. No, I think it's Trey Lance. I still think it's Trey Lance. Listen,
it's a question.
It's absolutely a debate. And here's the funny thing, Al. It's funny you said that. I was making a run last year in one of my dynasty leagues, and as part of the package, I traded away Trey Lance and got back Zach Wilson back when Zach was still a starter. And then I think promptly he became not the starter. But it's still a coin flip. I would still take Trey just because I think there's more upside. And that's what you're banking on at this point, right? But either guy, I mean, stashed at the end of your Superflex bench in Dynasty, I don't have an issue. I got a few shares of each of them. But let's get into it, shall we, boys? Because this is what the people are here for. All right. Again, if you want to follow the draft board yourself and take a look.
Did you want to talk about Judy or is that part of this draft?
Yeah, talk about Judy.
I want to talk to him as in context of the draft.
Okay.
Within context of the draft now, okay? Because we'll get to him. He went round six, as people can see here on the board. But let's save that little nugget for later because I got a take on that. Mm-hmm. Team 10 was Brandon Adam. Right next to him was Alan Sezlowski, team 11. Theo Greminger was team 12 of player profile, like we mm-hmm. talked. So, man, right at the end, you guys must have just been cursing at each other, just sniping each other along the board. But I would say, Brandon, you were pretty on brand with your first two ticks, Amon Ross St. Brown, Tony Pollard. But let's talk about you, Al. In a league like this, where we know that running back can dry pretty quickly, you went A.J. Brown, Chris Olave in the first round. Now, very importantly, it was third-round reversal. So then you were the second pick in the third round. You got Josh Jacobs. Came back in round four with Ramondre Stevenson. You were kind of hurting on yourself in the live broadcast over at RotoWire YouTube channel. I kind of like your start, Al. You've got a stud in Justin Fields. If Kyle Pitts pays off, like you could definitely compete. So, Al, first of all, rank your team out of 10. And
go ahead.
Just your general feelings on it. Like, what would you have done differently?
First of all, Shane liking my team, that's the kiss of death right there.
Yes.
Okay. So my feelings are now. Okay. So Brandon, like you just said, this is overall thoughts. Brandon and I were drafting right next to each other. Brandon's an excellent drafter, always tough to compete with. And we were next to Theo, too. And when you're in a snake draft, you're basically competing against like your half of the draft because you're not going to take the players on the other side. Basically, within, you know, ADP, if there's a hero pick you want to make, no problem. But like when you're in an auction draft, for example, you're competing against the whole draft. So I lucked out to the negative where I'm competing against two or three guys or four guys that basically I think are the sharpest in the draft. So I know Brandon can say, oh, there's a bunch of sharks in here, but I think he's one of them. So overall, my plan from the very beginning, picking at the end with third round reversal, I think I love drafting running backs. I'm a running back drafter, but this just is not the year to do it because there's, you know, the wide receivers that are auto starts that you don't even have to think about it are dry up at the, you know, the basically in the middle of round three, and running backs that I'm very comfortable starting are in round, you know, late round three to round seven. You know, I have no problem. Damian Pierce is my as a starter. I have no problem as Rashad White, and I didn't get those guys, but those types. So my plan was if Brandon didn't take Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's smart to be on him. I was going to take him. And then Chris Olave, only recently in the last few weeks have I become super bullish on him. That just comes through being influenced by beat writers who said that Chris Olave is ready to go to the next level. They believe that he will be in the Chase Jefferson range next year. Now, if I'm wrong about that, guys, it's a soft landing. Chris Olave, if he doesn't hit that range of outcomes, is still like wide receiver 9 or 11, right? So I'm betting that he's going to be wide receiver 2 or 3, but it doesn't cost me a lot to find out. I pass up on other guys that I believe have more risk, like Davante Adams, Jalen Waddle, because he's injured. And then Devontae Smith is the number 2 in his offense. And again, I love all those guys, but Olave is the unquestioned 1.
I think, Al, you were the first person last year in rookie season touting Chris Olave should and could be the wide receiver 1 in this class. Now, I'd say it's still too early to have the verdict, but as of right now, we got Garrett Wilson in the front, closely followed by Chris Olave. There's a definite argument that Chris Olave could and should have been in contention for rookie of the year or offensive rookie of the year last year. Of course, it was taken out down by Garrett Wilson, but I think that's a fantastic start. I think what's so interesting to me here, Al, is I have debated our fellow co-host Flex Matt about who I would take first, Chris Olave and Tony Pollard, because guess what? Spoiler alert here. In the DFS Army rankings over at DFSArmy.com in the draft kit that I produce, I have Chris Olave 1 spot ahead of Tony Pollard. Yeah. So I love that take.
It's a structure thing, right? It's a structure thing, right? And Brandon can attest to this, and he could jump in right here, but it just depends. Like, you know, someone said, like, here's the Christian McCaffrey versus Ja'Marr Chase, because those guys seem to go 2 and 3 a lot in drafts. And we get comments like that all the time on our social media. How the hell can you take Christian McCaffrey and Ja'Marr Chase? And then the other way. It's like, how do you want to start your draft? Do you want to start with a running back? Do you want to start with a wide receiver?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So, Brandon, we already talked about your start.
Brandon's on mute.
Oh. Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tony Pollard. Yeah, you're on mute there, Brandon. The one thing I will say is you both took an elite quarterback. Brandon in the 4th round took Justin Herbert, and then coming around on your next pick there, Al, you took Justin Fields in round 5. Brandon, I'm going to bring this one to you first. Justin Herbert, you passed on some pretty good talent like Ramondre Stevenson, like your favorite tight end, Darren Waller this year, Drake London. So there was a pretty stacked position player group still on the board. You elected to go with Justin Herbert. Talk about it.
Yeah, so I was hoping to – well, the way the board was setting up was this, was that in the fourth round going around, the only one tight end went off the board, and that was Mark Andrews. And that was 2 picks before I took Justin Herbert. So Hockenson was still on the board. I figured one tight end would probably get picked up before I could get Herbert and then swing through to get and grab him in the 5th round and grab Waller. So that was the plan. Unfortunately, Theo Grimminger is a stud and is knows that Darren Waller is steaming up every board there is. Mm-hmm. I left it out there to chance. I probably shouldn't have, but I elected to go with an elite quarterback in this build because I was targeting QJ later to stack with him. But I have I have 3 total builds for this contest, and 2 of them have Justin Fields as the QB1. So I didn't want to end up with Justin Fields again because I wanted to differentiate a little bit. So I don't have any Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert I feel like has number 1 overall upside. So even especially in this format where it's 6 points for pass touchdown, so the running quarterbacks, it's a little bit closer for the passing quarterbacks to the running quarterback. So I just wanted that elite QB1 upside in my lineup to have, and I was trying to attempt to stack them later, but it just didn't work out.
Don't you think that Herbert can run a little bit more this year? Like, the narrative that he doesn't run is probably because he was dinged up in week 1 with the ribs and all that. So
he only had 2 broken ribs. So I just don't. yeah, I see massive upside with Justin Herbert and that offense. I mean, the guy had close to 700 pass attempts last year. We can definitely see that again happening. Where my draft went a little bit askew because I was on full tilt. I was on full tilt mode when
Brandon, can I?
What's
can
that?
I just introduce this for a second? Can I just introduce it? Because as I was listening live, again, if you guys want to see this live draft, go over to the RotoWire YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And Alan Brandon, we're both streaming live as this draft is going. Alan makes his pick, and then he starts to chat with Brandon. And Brandon's already tilting. And you can see the chat like, you missed Darren Waller. How did you not get Darren Waller? Why would you go Justin Herbert? So Brandon's getting yelled up by Flex Matt in our chat. You start asking him questions, Al, live while Brandon's on the pick, and he's just he's freaking out, man. I was just
And what? So I distracted him.
So you were to blame, Al. Is all I'm trying to say
No, it's my fault. But honestly, I mean, I'm a big Terry McLaurin fan. I'm actually a very big Dotson drafter lately, and I have a ton of Dotson across my exposure. So I kind of was okay with trying to differentiate my builds a little bit, but Terry McLaurin, I have him down for about 130 targets this year. I think he's going to improve with Sam Howell. I think he could have his career year, and I kind of like him in that spot, but with the injury, I get it. Mark Stopa let me have it. He flamed me yesterday as well about the injuries for Terry McLaurin, but honestly, I think he's going to be playing week one. And if he doesn't, then I can survive a week or two without Terry McLaurin. But I just feel like Terry McLaurin, wide receiver one in that offense, he's going to get 130 targets. He's going to be the unofficial one. Dotson is a nice 1B in that offense. There, it's a 1A, 1B situation there. I am heavily invested in Dotson across all platforms. I just wanted a little bit of Terry McLaurin. But honestly, I probably should have went with my guy Tyler Lockett there. I should have went with Tyler Lockett, kept the upside for the Seahawks, jumped into the Seahawk offense. But, you know, you live and
learn. I'll say something nice about your Terry McLaurin pick. At least you didn't take that? Jerry. I'll say something nice about your Terry McLaurin pick. At least you didn't take Jerry Jeudy.
Oh, I would never take Jerry Jeudy.
Well, that's Shane and I have talked about this numerous times. Is that you're gonna just run into so many injuries. Don't start with one. Yeah. So even I think there's a chance Terry McLaurin would have run around to you on the next pick, but who knows, right? Maybe. You took him. I have him in a few leagues, and it's funny, you guys and Shane. It's funny you brought up Darren Waller because I was playing ADP chicken there too. On the 4.11 pick, I was hoping that he would come back to the 5.2. I saw that Theo on the end didn't have any running back, so I thought maybe for sure he would take one.
Exactly.
But as it turned out, he was going zero running back. So as you could see by his draft.
Yeah. Yeah, Theo definitely ruined my day with that Darren Waller pick. Before the draft even started, I was thinking two of which ways I'm going to go with this draft. I can either get the elite QB, because always in the fourth round when I'm doing when I've been doing other drafts from the spot, you know, an elite QB is available at that time. I can choose from a Justin Herbert or a Justin Fields. And like I said, I've got high exposure of Fields. I wanted some of Herbert. I decided to go Herbert. And then I just got sniped later by team eight. I missed by two picks to get Quentin Johnston when I took Elijah Moore in the eighth. I was targeting QJ there, and it almost happened, but it just didn't fall correctly. But yeah, I mean, it's just what it is. Sometimes you get a little bit, you know, on a little bit of pressure, and there's a lot of sharks in this draft. And, you know, if I could swap one thing in this whole draft, it probably would be Terry McLaurin for Tyler Lockett right now.
Can I just comment on that just real quick? So, like, you were tilting because Darren Waller left, but just, you know, from a strategy perspective here, okay? Yeah. So Theo Greminger picking at the 12th spot on the turn, and he went ahead of ADP and ahead of rankings by picking Darren Waller over a guy like TJ Hawkinson. And then Hawkins and Kittle went back-to-back in the middle of the next round, round six. I think what's very, very important for people as they're getting into the draft rooms is don't be slaves to ADP, okay? if you're on the turn and you have a strong conviction about a player, like Darren Waller wasn't going
to
come back to him.
Why did you say Hockenson? Clearly. Isn't that kind of like the chalk pick, like Waller over Hockenson at this point?
No, it's not. That's the first time I've seen it.
Yes. I did it the other night in the FFPC also. I took Waller in the middle of round three. Hockenson didn't go, and that's point and a half until round five. Yeah. I think that's where, you know, I thought that – I guess sometimes we get caught up in like the high stakes world, but yeah, that's already happened in a lot of drafts.
Well, I've got a ton of exposure to Waller before this big rise. But I just felt like he was going to last to me on the end there. I felt like I was ahead of ADP to grab him where I was planning on grabbing him, but you were planning on grabbing him anyway. So we had three guys targeting Waller in the same exact spot. It's just, I just didn't think you guys were going to do that. And I misread it and paid the price.
Well, one thing too, just to comment on that and put a bow on Darren Waller is that when you go to the NFSC ADPs, TJ Hockenson, Darren Waller are back-to-back in rankings. Hawk is first. It's 51 and 52. So literally back-to-back in the ADP rankings.
That's changed so fast.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the last 3 days. I'm going to take a look at that while you're talking, Shane. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I think I looked at it since Monday. So about the last 5-6 days sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think what's so interesting too is that we had a show earlier on the DFS Army podcast feed here where we talked about
Waller's ahead of him now on ADP, by the way.
Wow.
Last 3 days. Okay. That's when you're searching, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, Shane. I'll get you back to it. But when you're searching ADP for NFFC, because there's so many drafts going right now, I recommend 2 or 3 days. Like just in the last 3 days, we're talking about 50 drafts. That's enough to know what the trends are. Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, no. When I was looking at it, I looked at it from Monday the 21st. So call it 6 days, and that was 60
too long.
Drafts. So too long. Yeah, no, and that's a really sharp point, right, Al? Because things are so fluid, especially this time of the season. It is important to get the most up-to-date latest ADP. So that's really important. That's really sharp, Al. Okay, guys. So, one of the things we kind of teased a little bit, and we've even touched on a little bit, is just Jerry Jeudy. He went around six. Now, there's been some, I would say, general injury optimism where, for those who didn't hear, Jerry Jeudy was carted off this week with a hamstring injury. He's expected to miss probably at least 3 weeks into the season.
Yes.
But personally, this is just Shane talking, and Al, we've talked about it so long, is that fantasy football is already hard enough, right? When you're drafting a player that's injured already, especially with a soft tissue type injury like a hamstring, which creates explosiveness for the wide receiver position, I'm very, very reluctant to go and draft a player like Jerry Jeudy when players that went right after him, Jahan Dotson, George Pickens, Christian Kirk went a few rounds later. Al, you got Jordan Addison, Gabe Davis. So there were a lot of other options at the wide receiver position, or you could have branched out. You could have gotten Hockenson. You could have gotten Kittle. So I don't love that pick. I feel like if you wanted Jeudy, that's probably about where he has to go.
Well, here you go, Shane. It's Billy Wazowski, who is the team three. He's definitely one of the better NFFC drafters. So it's that I had that same thought you did. I was like, bad pick. But then I was like, all right, let me try to get into Billy's mindset here. So, and I'm just going to state the bull case. I agree with you. He's crossed off my list. Like I would have, he would have to be like round 9 for me to take him, and that's just not happening. So the news had just dropped that day. So Jerry Jeudy was routinely going in the third round of these drafts. So his ADP settled, like he hasn't settled yet. So three rounds sometimes feels like a discount, right? Even though it may not be the final landing spot, it just feels like, oh, wow, three rounds on Jerry Jeudy, you know, in an overall contest, let me at least draft like it's going to go right. That said, Billy also had three wide receivers, which he could start every week. So Jeudy doesn't have to be a starter for him either. He can put him on the bench, wait for him for a month because it's a 10-person bench. Now, in your five-team bench, if you have an IR spot, that's also an interesting way to think about it. But just in a normal 5-6 bench league, it's tough to do. So my guess is that's what Billy was thinking, is that I don't have to start him. I can wait for him. And what if things go positively? Now I have what I believe is a popular breakout guy, three rounds, and it's a unique build. So, but that said, you know, look at the players that went off after him. You know, you talked about Dotson, you know, Christian Kirk, and, you know, even some of the other options. Yeah, exactly. So I understand in this particular build why he did it, but it just like in a, just talking about the pick, it seems early for the same reason we keep coming back to, like, why start with an injury?
Yeah. When I look at the last two days, so, you know, we've had time to absorb that injury news. His ADP is actually 63. So it's pretty much bang on right where he went in this draft. So granted, small sample, only 16 drafts at this point, but something
to think about is the overall contest aspect of it. You're probably not going to win the 250K. So if there's a small edge to roll the dice on, even if it's like a 10 or 15% and it could pay off. Now, again, Jerry Jeudy doesn't strike me. Like, I loved him as a breakout, but it doesn't strike me as like a guy that's like going to win you the league. But if you look back to last season, the last like 5-6 weeks, he was like wide receiver 5. And then when Nathaniel Hackett was removed from the offense and it was let loose a little bit, he was like wide receiver 2. So sometimes, you know, you have to pay attention to what these experienced drafters are doing. And I think that's something to think about in your home league if you have an IR spot.
Yeah, if you got the room, he's worth a stash.
But he's not worth it. You don't want him clogging up week one when like all these awesome waiver wire guys are going to be available.
Yeah, we can talk about how I had Alvin Kamara, and so I picked him in the six. I thought it was a little bit high for him, but I didn't like any of the other running backs in the next round, to be honest. I didn't want to invest in the Cardinal offense. I didn't want to invest into a committee with DeAndre Swift. I didn't want to invest into Cam Akers and that terrible O-line. I didn't want to invest into David Montgomery. And I feel like David Montgomery might be a bit of a trap this year, meaning I don't think he's going to be able to do what Jamal Williams did with the touchdowns. I don't think that upside is realistic. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is an absolute superstar. I actually thought about Jahmyr Gibbs as my third round pick. I was thinking about doing that and just taking my first two elite RBs and then smashing wide receiver the rest of the way. I actually wish I would have done that now. But Jahmyr Gibbs is one of my guys. I was trying to, you know, try to figure out, but I had him on Ross St. Brown. But, you know, I think Kamara, the way he looked in the preseason, I feel like he's going to have his general role. He might have a little bit less volume than we're used to, but he looked really, really fresh this preseason, and he looked different than last year. And reading into it more, he changed his complete workout regimen and the people that he surrounded himself with his offseason, and it's a new team around him, and he says he's feeling amazing. So, and he looked really dang good. So I decided to plunge with Alvin Kamara as my RB2 when he gets back off the suspension. And I backed it up with Zach Charbonnet for the first 3 weeks. I think Zach Charbonnet is a guy that I can kind of lean on for a little while as a PPR running back in a high-flying offense like the Hawks. You know, if you talk to our guy Mike Dickinson, he believes Zach Charbonnet is going to finish in the top 24. So I feel like he has some real upside if a Ken Walker does miss any kind of time. You know, Zach Charbonnet is a lottery ticket I wanted to own. So that was my thought process for my RB2 position.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And now, don't worry, you can rest well at night, because even though you left the show, we have a resident wet blanket in Mike Dickinson on the show to constantly be destroying our takes. So we appreciate that. Hey guys, I got a question. I'll throw it out to both of you, but this was something that Matt brought up in the chat here. And he said, what about Stopa's team where he took Christian McCaffrey, of course, San Francisco 49ers running back. And then in round 3, he came back with Deebo Samuel, wide receiver of the San Francisco 49ers. Just from a team construction standpoint, I'll throw it to you first.
Sure.
How, especially at the top of the draft, how comfortable are you drafting two players from the same team? Is there a potential upside that you're limiting by doing that? I mean, say it's a CMC week. Does that come at the expense of a Deebo, especially with the way that Deebo plays the game?
Yeah, I asked Stopa the same question when we did a board review, and though I don't agree with what he did, his rationale was pretty sound. So at that point, he wanted for pick 1.4, he thought he was getting Tyreek Hill, right? Obviously, that didn't happen. So CMC is the consensus pick there. And when he took Josh Allen around 2, so when he was coming around in round 3. He, on his tiering, Deebo Samuel was the last guy in the tier that he felt was a significant tier drop.
Right.
So that's right. why he took him. Now, he understood that Debo and Christian McCaffrey, they're not like correlation plays, but mm-hmm. he thinks that there's going to be two guys that get fed every week, and he thinks Debo and Christian McCaffrey are the most likely to be, and that Brandon Ayuk, in his judgment, and George Kittle could be the least consistent. So he sees Debo and Christian McCaffrey as basically having a floor, whereas some of the other San Francisco players that are fantasy options will be more volatile. Again, Debo is not a player I draft in the third round, but if he mm-hmm. if that's how he believes it's going to go down, then it does make sense. So just... Yeah, I caught the same thing. I was like, those players seem in non-correlation players.
If you actually look at the splits when Debo is playing with CMC, it's not great for when CMC is on the field. DM's, you know, he's not getting those rushes. He's not getting those high-end rushes that he was getting 2 years ago. It's just not happening.
Yeah,
ever since he got the contract, that's not been the case.
I'm not defending the position. I'm just explaining
I actually was going to say that when we talked about it on the stream, but we kind of moved past it pretty fairly quickly. I just think the arbitrage value, I definitely thought about IU where I took Terry. I kind of liked him there because I was thinking about getting Brock Purdy as my second QB way late. I think Brock Purdy is a massive value in drafts right now. And he has elite players all around him. So that was something I was thinking about doing, but then I stepped on a landmine and took Terry McLaurin. It's just what happens. But, you know, I like his draft. I was surprised he decided to do Debo there. But I get what he was saying. There is a teardrop for sure after that point with the wide receiver position. So I understand that. And
Matt had asked in the chat. Oh, yeah, there it was right there about Christian Watson. So I forget sometimes that, you know, you live in your own bubble that you forget that sometimes people don't absorb when we're getting so many takes. But yeah, Christian Watson is, if we're talking about like the cliche flag plant player, Christian Watson, in my opinion, will be in that same discussion as Chris Olave and should be this year and Garrett Wilson. Like, he belongs in that tier. And why? It's because he already broke out. We don't have to project mm-hmm. him to break out. And what do I mean by that is that Christian Watson, from the time he became a full-time starter, which is week 10 to week 18, two-month sample, small sample, but it's, you know, football is a small sample, was wide receiver 9, meaning a top 10 wide receiver. And you could say, okay, Aaron Rodgers isn't there, and I understand that. It's a significant downgrade, but in the one-game sample that he played with Jordan Love last year against the Eagles in week 12, he went 4 for 110 and a touchdown. Now, again, does that mean anything? I don't know, but at least he did it. You know, it's better to do it than not do it. So maybe he'll be a little bit more volatile week to week. I don't know, but I think this is the cheapest you're ever going to see Christian Watson in drafts ever again. And he's going to be one of those guys that's right in the mix with Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle. You know, I told you, I think maybe Chris Olave has a chance to take a step up, but you're going to, so the short answer, guys, is yes. I've been taking, in our dynasty leagues, I've been taking him over the veterans like Cooper Kupp and Stephon Diggs. So I'm in on him. And if I'm wrong, it's going to cost me big, but I'm willing to make the bet.
It's a great bet. I was just going to say, one of our Uncle Says-isms is just, sometimes it's not about the size of the sample, but it's about the magnitude
there it is.
Of the sample, right? It's something you say all the time. And man, he's showing it. He's showing that he can be explosive.
Shane, I don't mean to, but you like just to, I want you to underline that thing there. And I know it's like the magnitude, like if a pitcher mm-hmm. in his first start ever strikes out everybody, like mm-hmm. goes in and 27 strikeouts, it's not a large sample, but it's pretty good. You know, it's pretty good. You're going to be like, all right, okay, this guy is that's a significant magnitude of sample size. Sorry, Shane, go ahead.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think that it's a smart take. I'm just looking at Stopa's team again, and I guess it's more a question for you guys here. Like, there's a cash payout for the winner of this specific league, right? Like, you don't need to win the full 250K to get a payout. Okay,
because the league prize is $1,500, and then the top two teams advance to where the top two teams in all the leagues move on, and then it's your cumulative 3 week score, and I think like 50 get paid, and you also bring your weekly average with you. So if your weekly average score is like 147, you start with 147 points. If your weekly average is 157, you start with 157 points. So it gives you your weekly average from weeks 1 to 14 as a starting point. So you might have like a 10 or 15 point lead on the rest of the field of the two teams that get in.
Okay, no, that's really interesting. Because the reason I ask is because you know, I'm not hating on Stopa. I actually like Stopa's team, but you know, he went CMC and Debo, which we discussed, and then later on, around 7 and round 9, he went DeAndre Swift and Rashad Penny. So he's hedging again with the Philadelphia backfield. So it just seems to me like those are more conservative plays to win this league versus a $250K. Which, hey man, it's not a bad payout to win a league like this, right? Yeah, and but it's still not.
Shane, that's when you do enough of these drafts, and I've been doing the NFFC for like 9 years, 10 years. Mm-hmm. You find that like three guys are just like their focus is winning the mm-hmm. contained league, and hey, if I get into the contest, winning the 250 is so hard, I'll be happy with 30th place and taking home another 3,000, right? And then there's a consolation bracket too for you have to read through the rules, but right. Other guys are only going for the 250. Like their volume drafters are only going to the 250, and then there's usually one or two players that are just like, hey, I'm just going to draft how I draft the guys I like, and whatever happens, happens. So there's usually those three different mindsets in every draft room.
No, I get that. Okay, real quick here, and then I've got some follow up questions for both you gentlemen. So straight up, you're taking Christian Watson or T. Higgins there on the clock. You get only two players to choose from. Christian Watson and T. Higgins. We know what Brandon would do. He'd choose T because he chose T. But what about you, Al?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get them both on ADP, can't you? Because T, I guess not in this particular in your home league. You
I was
can.
Waiting for him.
Yeah,
yeah. In your home league, you can get both of them. But on the clock, I probably would take T. Higgins, but I'm not convinced that that's the right decision.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. When you look at the end of the season, easily Christian Watson could outscore T or vice versa.
The floor is safer with T. I'll admit that. Like, you know, Christian Watson could fail epically. T. Higgins is like, if he fails, it's like wide receiver 14.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about late round strategy, because generally speaking, especially for the first, I'd say 5, 6, 7 rounds, ADPs are pretty sharp. You could just auto draft up based on ADP and probably be pretty happy with your team. But where you're going to win your league, and especially win a high-stakes contest like this, who are some of the players? Brandon, I'm going to throw it to you first. Who are some of the players that you like drafting, call it rounds 8, 9, 10, 11? So that kind of that sweet spot where there's still some fairly decent upside plays, mm-hmm. like a guy like I'm looking like a Kendre Miller, like a Marvin Mims. Like, who are a few guys that you're targeting? And I know, Brandon, you've done a ton of best ball drafts. Mm-hmm. Al, you've been, I think, a lot more of these season-long managed type leagues. But Brandon, who are some players that you've been targeting a little bit later in your drafts?
So yeah, so in I took one of them in the ninth, my favorite guy, Zach Charbonnet. There's a group of running backs that's when I like to get lottery ticket running backs a little bit. So that's who Zach Charbonnet is for me. One that Greminger took is Tank Bigsby. I'm really mm-hmm. big into Tank Bigsby. I like Elijah Mitchell's upside if CMC fails for any reason. That's another guy that's really good that I think has extreme upside. Odell Beckham, I think he has – who knows who's going to be the number one in Baltimore? We really don't know. And if it's Odell Beckham, then he's a value at where he's going in drafts. Devin Achane, another guy that we – that Matt and I have been high on in the chat is Devin Achane. I know he's dealing with a shoulder thing, but he'll probably end up wearing just a harness and playing. It's an AC separation. So that's more about pain than structure. So I think he's going to end up playing. Devin Achane is a guy that I like in PPR leagues because he can stack up catches very quickly in offenses, especially in this Miami offense where they are going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of deep shots. But when those things are developing, that back is sneaking out for an easy dump down pass. You know, those are going to be very easy for Devin Achane to accumulate in that offense. I feel like he's a nice steal. Once he, you know, gets healthier for the rest of the season, I think he's going to be a smash too. Ty Chandler is another guy in Minnesota that I kind of like. He showed in the preseason, he had some burst. He had some ability. He can catch the football. They trust him in all three downs. I think he's another guy that can actually make a big splash if Madison fails for any reason. There's another guy I took too, Rashid Shaheed. He's a best ball darling I got. I kind of like him in that offense. He's got a high ADOT guy. It seems like everybody in camp really likes this kid. All the coaches do too. Jalen Hyatt, I took another guy that is a big deep shot play guy that you and I kind of been arguing over. Mm-hmm. You think Paris Campbell, I think Jalen Hyatt in that Giant offense. I think that Jalen Hyatt has a real opportunity to do something pretty good.
The difference between Hyatt and Campbell in seasonal leagues is Jalen Hyatt, it strikes me as the type of player where his best games are going to happen on your bench. Maybe. And his worst games will probably happen in your lineup, whereas Paris Campbell has a chance to be a little bit more week-to-week consistent. They're even talking about using him. I know you hear this a lot, but using him as like a running back, and it just strikes me as like more plausible in the sense like the same way they use Debo, because there really is no second running back there. I mean, Matt Breda, that's not like a serious player at this time. And then Eric Gray, the rookie, like they're trying to like figure out how to even keep him on the roster. They're having him return kicks just because like they need to justify the pick somehow. And then I don't think anybody takes Gary Brightwell seriously. So that's why I think Paris Campbell might be the better fantasy pick, even though Jalen Hyatt might be the more impactful player for the Giants itself in managed leagues.
Yeah, I just don't believe in Paris Campbell and his health whatsoever. I feel like he's going to end up being out, and when that happens, Jalen Hyatt is going to take it and run. But there's one other guy that Stopa took that I really like for late guys. Is this it? Matt's gonna jump for joy when I say this name. Luke Musgrave. I really liked what Stopa did there. He really was in a pinch for tight ends. He had no tight ends exposure until the 13th round, and he got himself, you know, in the 15th round, he got himself Luke Musgrave, which is going to be an automatic starter from the day one in that Green Bay offense. And from what everything we've been hearing, you know, Luke Musgrave's looked pretty impressive. Those are some names that I've been, you know, targeting. I like Chuba Hubbard as well, because I'm a big Miles Sanders fader. I don't like taking Miles Sanders. So Chuba Hubbard is somebody I'm into as well.
Yeah, well, Cody Carpentier was at the camp, and he said it was a pretty even split between those two players. So I would still probably take Miles Sanders, but if you're fading him, then Chuba's not a bad bet. So just to summarize some of Brandon's takes, basically you're going for young upside running backs primarily, and then you're sprinkling a few of these upside wide receivers. Al, are there any players that you've gravitated to? I will comment, you chose Paris Campbell, which I love, absolutely love. After Brandon took Jalen Hyatt, but who's some players you've been targeting, especially in these types of leagues, Al, where you're trying to win the damn 250K? Who are some players you like?
Right. So nobody likes Michael Pittman this year not because they don't like Michael Pittman, because Anthony Richardson, you know, there's the narrative that he's not an accurate quarterback, and you know that the stats in college do bear that out somewhat. But how about preseason so far, Al? Yeah. But it's one of my favorite fantasy football strategies are the sophomores, the second year players that didn't break out, that are like second round picks, or, you know, even first round picks the year before. And that's Alec Pierce, right?
I mean,
you take a shot on him. If he develops into the consistent guy, I mean, Anthony Richardson's going to have to throw the ball to someone, right? I mean, it's going to be 450 passing attempts, and you know, he seems like the guy that will launch it. Pierce can get behind the defense. So again, he has that issue where you might not be able to predict the weeks that he's going to go off, but I'm willing to take the shot later in drafts. You referenced Stopa's tight end strategy in this, where he just took three tight ends. I thought that in this particular draft that if you took a risky tight end on the other side of the board, like there was one team had Chigakonkwo as their main starter. Mm-hmm. I thought Jake Ferguson seems like he'll be a stable tight end guy. We've seen what the starting tight end in Dallas has done in the past, even when we didn't know their name. So they weren't like a name brand player in the beginning of the year. So Ferguson strikes me as a good late round tight end type. And then at the running back position, I'm still drafting Leonard Fournette, because look what happened with Zeke, right? Yeah. Zeke was like a 15th, 16th, 17th round pick, gets drafted. Now you're happy to take him in like the 10th or 11th round. That seems like the path Fournette could be on too. I took him in this particular draft in the 16th round. What if he signs with Minnesota, right? What if it's like all of a sudden it's like,
Yeah, Kareem Hunt so, too. Same thing. Yeah.
The thing with Kareem, again, the same principle applies. He went round 20, but the problem with Kareem Hunt, as I'm seeing it, is that he showed up to two different, or to Indianapolis and to Saints, and left without a contract. And the reports were that he was a little bit out of shape. And that
really?
And that was a little bit of a red flag. I mean, okay. Whereas Fournette is still kind of waiting and picking his spot.
Everybody expects him to be out of shape, so it's not a big
deal. Right. I was going to say.
So Kareem Hunt, yes, the same principle applies, and you know, we don't have any, we didn't, you know, look at his BMI, but the fact that he made two visits and didn't leave with anything and still hasn't signed was a little bit red flaggy to me. So, yeah. But if you're talking about players that actually are on rosters and have jobs at the running back position, I mean, look at someone like Keontae Ingram with James Conner. Everyone complains about that he has missed games. I mean, he's the next man up, Keontae Ingram. And then like a boring pick that nobody wants is Devin Singletary. But if you know, if he's the second running back on a team that we expect to be improved with the running the ball. So those are a couple of the picks. They're not. And then actually one more that I think is come up over the last few days. Nobody wants Adam Thielen, right? But in the preseason game, in the preseason game, looked pro right, man. And Bryce Young has been the most targeted player, Adam Thielen, for Bryce Young. So 16th round in this draft, I think that he's worth. Like a 13th, team one did. I think he's worth in your home league like a 13th round pick, 12th round pick for your wide receiver four. I'd be happy to have him.
I have Adam Thielen. So it's funny. Adam Thielen, Alec Pierce are literally in my top five most owned best ball wide receivers.
Love that.
There is.
Yeah.
So I'm a huge Alec Pierce guy. I am 100% with you. He was in my queue. Alan, you sniped him. I was going to take him on that very next pick. So great pick right there. Shout out to one pick for Matt. I took him for him. Sean Tucker. In the last round, I think last two rounds, I took Sean Tucker, the running back for Tampa Bay. But yeah, I think that pretty much covers our whole draft. But I totally enjoyed it, brother. Appreciate you inviting me on. I got a few more shots at this thing and a couple more.
Keep it up, man. You did a great job. Hey, Shane, I just wanted to ask you because Brandon brought up the Sean Tucker. What do you think is really going to happen with the Tampa Bay backfield? Like, what percentage for each guy? What Rashad White? I'm curious on your opinion here.
Man, I think it's going to be like a 65% Rashad White and then sprinkle in everybody else. I mean, Sean Tucker, Brandon knows this. He was a guy that I was pretty high on throughout the whole rookie draft process. Yep. Obviously, we were pretty disappointed he didn't get drafted at all. He was a UDFA when he got signed, but a lot of that was a medical thing. Like the thing I like about Sean Tucker is that he's athletic, right? He was a sprinter in college as well. He's a super athlete. He's super explosive, but he had a heart condition, which apparently is now not an issue. Listen, in Dynasty, where we have these players for their careers, maybe a little bit more risk, right? But a player like Sean Tucker, I think he is going to eat into that Tampa backfield.
Yep.
The thing that I worry about, though, Al, just to be honest, is that I think Tampa could be it might not be very good, right? So they might not be in scoring position very often. And when they are in scoring position, it's going to be the Rashad White show. So I don't have any exposure to Sean Tucker in any of my redraft leagues. But in best ball, especially like the DraftKings where it's like a full PPR and, you know, Sean Tucker out of the backfield, maybe takes one to the house. That's the type of play. But no, I think it's going to be the Rashad White show. I have a ton of Rashad White. We're a little bit ahead of ADP with Rashad White by about a full round. I'm not saying you always have to take him there, right? You have to make sure you understand the draft board, but I have a lot of exposure. I'm very bullish on Rashad White, and 65% share of a backfield in today's NFL is the lion's share of a backfield. So that's how I see it shaking
out. That's a total line. Exactly. That's what we're looking for.
All right, boys, we did it again, Al. I was saying you are the Howard Stern of the fantasy football space.
What does that mean?
On brand.
What, is that a Jewish joke?
Oh my God!
I'm all, just kidding. Listen, just kidding. Just kidding.
Listen, you're from New York.
You just made him sweat. You're from New York.
Hey, listen. Listen, I've made dancing jokes to Brandon. I've put my foot in my mouth way too many times. But listen, Al, you're from New York. You don't have quite the same flowing locks as Howard Stern, but you got the same personality. I think it's a debate of who's a little bit more crude, you or Mr. Stern. For those of you who don't know, go over to the player profiler feed and go check out the Dynasty Truth Fantasy Football Podcast. Al, you were the host there.
Sonic Truth.
What did I say?
Dynasty Truth.
Sonic Truth Dynasty Football Podcast. He does that with Matt Kelly and Theo Greminger. You were the host, reigning in that show. I don't know how you do it, brother, but you do a fantastic job. It's complete hell, but you want to hear some stories on Alan Sosnowski? They're all there, brother. Alan Sosnowski's wet dream is, of course, his high school teacher, but I digress. We're going to end it here. Al, before we get out, for those who are joining late, just tell the people where they can find you and some of the content you're working on.
Yeah, all social media at Alan Sosnowski. It's my name, so follow along. And then if you have Sirius Radio, Sunday mornings on game day, we'll be on at 7 a.m. getting you ready, all updated overnight news. And if you Sundays for the rest of August, 1 o'clock, Channel 87, Sirius XM Radio.
Yes, sir. And for all of you content producers out there, okay, and you want to step up your content game, go follow Alan Sosnowski on the socials, especially the TikToks of the world, the YouTube shorts. Go follow the RotoWire podcast or TikTok feed. The quality of the video content that you do, Al, is top tier, bar none. There's nobody better in the industry, and we consume a lot of content here. This isn't a biased statement. You are the best video content creator in the industry.
Wow.
Stamp it.
I'll take it.
You. Go check it out. Go see what Al does. No, he's got a lot of hits.
And guys, I appreciate what you guys do too, man. I think that you've shown, okay, here's my chance to give you a kiss back, a compliment back, is that you guys have showed up every week and you're providing a real unique perspective on this podcast. And I love the way you guys are growing it and the chemistry you're developing. You know me, I'm a lifelong fan of you guys, and I'll be following along.
Right, we appreciate you, brother. So, of course, go check out rotowire.com to get all of Alan's content. rotowire.com/try to get a 2-day free trial. Of course, dfsarmy.com, where we hail. Go check it out. We got the draft kit live now for our VIP members. It's all Shane Seeley's content. So, you either hate or you love it, but go check it out. We love your feedback. Of course, you know, what does DFS Army do? Well, we print money, baby. We print money. We got real members winning real life-changing money. We have multiple milli winners. People are taking down contests every single day. dfsarmy.com, dfsarmy.com. So for Alan Sosnowski, for Brandon Allen, I'm Flex Shane, and we are the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. Good luck!